Okay, Boker Tov. Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is Daf Nun Dalet, and we are already down two lines above the wider lines. And we got up to the next part of the Mishnah that describes the Tnai HaKetuva. Remember that all of these clauses of the Ketuva refer to the words Tnai HaKetuva, because in a sense, there are conditions. In other words, if I die, then this is what you will get. We call them all Tnai HaKetuva. So in the event of my death, Ateh Yatva Bebeti, so the Diyuk HaLashon, again, is remarkable how much we're makpid on every single word to be Medayek. And over here, the issue is that the Lashon of the Mishnah repeats the word Bebeti twice. So it says, Atihe Yatva Bebeti, Ko Yemei Megar Armalutech Bebeti. Now, what is the point of stressing the Bebeti twice? That's really what this is based on. And the Diyuk, therefore, that Rav Yosef makes is that the word Bebeti is really important. And that if he does not have a home in the sense of a real house, what he's got is that he's got this little hut that he lives in. He never could afford a home. And he lives in a trailer. And there the Yorshim say, listen, we can't have this woman, your wife, living here in this little trailer with us. So then in Achinami, they have a right to tell her that she should move back to her family. They don't have where to put her. Because he said, Dafka Biveti, and that means Biveti, Velo Bivikti. And remember, a Bikta, we were Medayik in Masechet Shabbos, that the makor of the word Bikta is Bei Akta, a place where you feel pressed, crushed, compressed. And therefore, it would not include this little trailer abide. But that doesn't mean that the entire condition of treating the Almana to Mizonot and so on, that the entire condition is predicated on owning a home. It simply means that living in the house, that is predicated on a home. But if there is no house, so then they can send her home to her family or whatever, wherever she wants to go. But of course, they will still be responsible for providing her with Mizonot. So that's the point I want to make, says Rabbi Yossi. It's true, Bebeti, but lo bebikti, on the other hand, mizonos isla. Mar Baravashi says, no, the entire thing is basically dependent. This condition of the ketuvah is dependent on there being a home. And therefore, if there is no home, once they're sending her back to her family, then the whole clause does not apply. And afila mizone letle, because it's interrelated, but we don't pass it like that. Letilchataka mar Baravashi. Omrev Nachman Omar Shmuel. Let's understand now the words of Ko Yime Megar Armalutech Beveti, because there are deep, actually, relationship issues that are hidden within those words. So long as you continue, so to speak, the sojourn is the literal translation, the sojourn of your widowhood in my home. Now that's very poetic. But the truth is that the poetry conceals some profound feelings over here. Because the point is that for a while after the death of her husband, the woman truly is in a state of widowhood. So she's in a sojourn of widowhood in which she is still living in her mind, living out the relationship with her deceased husband. Now, as is the unfortunate fate of our silly species, this doesn't last for very long. And of course, memories are all very nice, but as we know from the Gemara, it's a gezera, the mate should be nishtakach min alev within 12 months. And it doesn't take too long until she's starting to feel maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to have another man in my life, right? Now, in that circumstance, would we call her sojourning in your widowhood? Or would we say the poor girl's got nowhere to go, so she's hanging on to the home, but she's praying every night, oh, Lord, send me a nice young man to be my new husband, right? So that cannot be called sojourning in widowhood. So we understand that the romantic language over here is really meant as an indication of romance. Therefore, let's understand what would be. Somebody presents her with a proposal for marriage, right? And Tavulina say, and she agrees. At that point, it's pretty clear she is no longer living in this romantic sojourn of widowhood. And at that moment, she loses her mizonot because she's no longer really living with him. She's living in her mind with somebody else. So the moment she says that, it is overs, and she does not anymore have the mizonot which were being given to her by her dear husband, despite the fact that he's deceased, because he always wanted to care for her. But he sure ain't interested in her anymore when she loses her interest in him. And therefore, that's the end of the condition, and it's included in those words. Now, the question is, what would actually constitute the end of the sojourn in widowhood? So what Shmuel is implying is that somebody gave her a proposal and she turned him down, right? So then it would be okay. The fact that she turned him down means that she is still sojourning in her widowhood. Now, wouldn't you think that if they're already giving her proposals, that people are picking up on the idea that she's ready to move on in life? You would, wouldn't you? And yet, what Shmuel is mashma is that it doesn't matter what the reason is that she rejects the proposal, but if she rejects the proposal, then she has her mizonot. But what if she only rejected the proposal because she doesn't like the way this guy smells? I mean, it has nothing to do with her being connected to her dear deceased husband. She's just waiting for a better offer. I mean, how can you say that if she rejects the offer, so then she's still with her husband? The whole thing looks very strange to me. Well, says Ravanan, I actually heard from Mar Shmuel that it depends on why she made the rejection. So if she says, how can you give me a proposal when I still live in my mind with my dear husband? I can't even think of moving on. Okay, a classic response, which means that she is still sojourning in her widowhood. So that would be when I, Shmuel, say that there she still continues to get mizonot. But if she says to him, you jerk, I would never marry somebody like you. So then it has nothing to do with her husband. And then she's basically indicating that she is open to proposals, not from a jerk like you. So then that would be a rejection of her husband. So if what she says is machmat b'nei adam she'ena mehuganim la, that this is not the kind of guy I want to marry, then she is saying, I do want to marry, I just don't want to marry you. And in that case, she has rejected the period of her romantic sojourn in her widowhood. I can tell you one adorable story where we, actually, Moshe's not here, but you remember we used to go to the Esrogim, and every year we went to Chavavei Tzion to select Esrogim. A wonderful person there, Rav Schwartzman's brother, actually, was. And they had the farm and they had the beautiful Esrogim. We would go every year and spend hours and hours, and she would come out and would bring us things to eat and to drink. It was very sweet. Every year we did this. And, okay, so we didn't go for a while, a couple of years. We had some Esrogim. I can't remember. Why didn't we go, Barnea? Whatever it was. Anyway, so I decided I'm going to go out there. I actually took one of my grandchildren along, and I'm going to go out there just visit her because it was in Netanya, and like it's not far from Netanya anyway. So fine, so I drive out there, knock on the door, you know, and I ask her. So what was his name again, Barnea? No. Okay. Anyway, so I ask her, how's your husband? So she says, oh, he's dead. So I'm so sorry. I say to her, sorry, what are you sorry for? I'm very happy. It's a little bit shocking to my poor innocent grandson. I was innocent at that time anyway. But she explained, she says, listen, we were married like 65 years, you know. That's a long time. It was fine. Every minute of it was great. But I'm the this is her words, I'm the happiest almana in the world. She says, I can finally do all the things I wanted to do and he never let me do. And as a matter of fact, I'm going out right now and I'm getting my hair colored. You can imagine if they were married 65 years, she ain't no spring chicken, right? And my kids are yelling at me, and they're saying, yeah, a woman of your age shouldn't be going out and dyeing her hair. And I'm saying to them, if you don't want to come visit, don't come visit. I'm living the way I want to live. Goodbye. And I'm off. Is that unbelievable? And she says, and I still wake up in the middle of the night and put my hand over to feel him to make sure that he's there. This is like, it's no contradiction at all. Amazing. Okay, so much for ko yume megar amunutech. What a humanity, right? It was wonderful, but I'm the happiest Alman in the world. Okay, so we understand.
I spoke to an Alman in the robot, and they said, why don't you get remarried? She said, one was enough.
Excellent. Well, okay, anyway, so that's the question, Sashmuel. It depends how she says it. Now, there's obviously other things that could indicate that she's no longer living the life of the sojourn of widowhood. So Amr of Chisda, look, if she sleeps with somebody, she certainly is no longer attached to her husband, right? So that's the end. We find out she's been in bed with another guy. So then, in la mizonot, Omer of Yosef, look, even if she gets all prettied up, right? So now, like, she's, you can easily tell when an almana is looking for a new relationship. So she dresses up and she puts on her eye makeup and so on and so forth. She's got her hair done. So obviously, at that point, she's looking for a new husband. In la mizonot. Now listen, the one who said that if she was sleeping with a guy, that she is losing, this is very surprising, this Gemara, that she's going to lose her support, kol shekein, if she makes up her hair. What? Yes, because the point is that if you say that she only loses her support because she was kichlo pirchasa, zinta, she still gets a support. Why? Because anybody can end up sleeping with someone. That doesn't prove anything. So fine. So again, my time, Yetzer Anasa. This is a very deep yisod of the Masechet that we've seen all along. That sexual behavior is can be spontaneous. It is not something, not only that, but it may be irresistible. So you can't judge her. Well, obviously, if she's sleeping with somebody, so she no longer is interested in, that's simply not the case. She doesn't have a husband, and she needs a relationship. Mashenkein, if she's consciously looking for a relationship, and she's prettying herself up, and she wants that relationship, so then, enachinami, all of us, not including Barnea, that Zoom has put together over here, who have good things to drink, l'chaim. Zoom never fails. Yes, indeed. Anyway, so this is quite surprising, right? Anyway, bottom line is, none of this is true. V'le tilchata, k'kol ha'nishmaitza, everything that we said about, you know, if she rejected a guy, but she says he's not beautiful, he's not good enough for her, or if she sleeps with a guy, or she makes herself pretty, or whatever it is, none of these things indicate enough that she has separated herself from the household of her husband. If she goes to court and she sues the heirs for her ketuvah, then obviously she wants to strike out. She wants to strike out on her own. And she's not happy with sitting in the house, being supported as if she was still married to the guy. And at that point, she's not in the sojourn, so to speak, of the husband that was. Okay. So therefore, if she went to court, only that is enough of a reason. Wait a second. You're telling me that just because she went to court to get her ksuva, she loses her support? Vatanya, the Braita says, Machra ketuvata, or Mishkena ketuvata. She sells her ksuva to somebody else in order to get money out of it. Remember that's always, you get a certain percentage, right? So in this case, it's much better because she's really owed her ktuva. We know the guy who bought it knows that the husband died already. Or if she used the ksuva as a mashkon, she goes up to take a loan for her favorite project, and she puts her ktuva up as collateral. Or if she makes her ketuvah napotike, let's say that the husband had set aside a particular field and said, you will be able to collect your ketuvah from this particular field. And she goes and she takes that field as an apotike. Remember the word apotike gavi? Apotike equals apo tehe koi. That the security and liens shall be specific to this field, which means you can go directly to collect from it instead of needing to go through a whole court procedure to decide which thing you're going to be able to collect from. And there's all kinds of useful issues that come from making a potiki. But the bottom line is that she has a need for security of one type or another in order to be able to translate her ketuvah into money for herself. So in all of these situations, it's the equivalent of demanding the ketuvah, translating the ketuvah into a way in which she can move on in life, and therefore ein la mizonot. Now notice there's a very important case missing. The case that's missing is the fact that she wants her ketuvah directly. So why doesn't it say that in the event that the almana demands the ksuva, that is immediately a mechila, or a moving out, I should say. It's more than a mechila. It's a moving out. So hani in tova'at lo. So apparently that's not like Shmuel, because Shmuel, all of these cases, note there's a big difference. The difference is that she doesn't demand, she got. She actually translated it into cash. Shmuel was saying, even if she hasn't translated into cash, she just opens up the proceedings in a courtroom that's already considered to be moving on. So isn't it a big chiddush to say just because she wanted the ksuva, she already loses her support? How come it says only if she actually translated the ksuva into money? So answers the Gemara, no. There's a different reason for why we left out that case. Not because it isn't true, but simply because it has nothing to do with the set that we're talking about. The set of cases that we're talking about is bein bebeidin, bein shelo bebeidin. All of these things have nothing to do with bezdin. If she was capable of translating her ketuvah into cash in terms of an apotiki or a mashkan and so on, see, even if she didn't go to bezdin, all she did was went to Mowili, and she told him, set me up a mortgage with this, that's already going to be enough. Masha Enkin, if she's tovah the ketuvah, she can't go to Mowili. She's got to go to a courtroom. So what we're talking about are things that are not part of the judicial proceedings. That's why we don't talk about tovat ketuvah. But what does that have to do with? Well, why would we talk about other sets? So therefore, since a tovat is only nogea bebeidin, if she just stop makes telephone call to the heirs and she says, where's my ketuvah? I want my ketuvah. I'm going to speak to the rav. That's nothing. It's only when she goes into the beidin to be tovat ketuvah, then and only then is it Shmuel's halacha. That's where it kicks in. Okay, the last thing that we learned in the Mishnah was the different minhagim between Yerushalayim and the Galil, and we talked about Yehuda as being very different. Now, Yehuda would write that in the event that the heirs want to pay off your ketuvah, it's up to them, and you get support only up until that time, which, of course, inverts the whole thing, where not that she is tovat ketuvah, that is enough to get her off. It's true that that's enough, but it's up to her. Mashenkin and Yehuda, they said, the whole thing is built around them, my heirs. If they decide that they want already to pay you off right away, they can pay you off with the ketuvah, and then you will not get support. Itma. Rav Amar, listen, the stam ketuvah is made Kanshe Yehuda. So in other words, what we're talking about over here is what is that virtual ketuvah, so to speak, which is held in the Beit Din. So we have this virtual ketuvah. That's how the whole Mishnah began. If he didn't write the ketuvah, it doesn't matter. There is a ketuvah because the ketuvah is essentially a Tanai Beit Din. But what's the language, so to speak, of the virtual ketuvah? That's the question. So Rav says the virtual ketuvah is like Yehuda, that kol, not kol yemei megor amunatech, but until you're paid off by my heirs. Obviously, if you wrote a ketuvah that specified the way that it said in the Galil or Yerushalayim, that would be fine. But if you don't, and we're kicking in with the virtual ketuvah, then she cannot demand support if they're ready to pay off her ketuvah. Shmuel says, no, the virtual ktuva is actually like Anshe Galil, which is like Anshe Yerushalayim. Until she wants to go and get her ktuva, she's able to continue to have to support. And we can't force her to take the ktuva. Now, the halacha is that basically, in terms of the minhag, the city of Bavel, the whole parvadaha, all of the parvarim, which are the surrounding suburban areas of Naharda, they follow the way that Shmuel understands it. And the idea over here would be that it would actually be more chomer against the heirs and that she can continue to get her support the way that we do today. And the area, the Bavel is like Rav, that she only gets it until they want to pay her. In Naharda, they went according to Shmuel. So Naharda and all of the areas around Naharda will explain what all those areas mean. How do we define the boundaries? And there was actually a Maisa where a woman who grew up in Mechoza, now Mechoza was near Bavel, she married a guy who came from Naharda, where they were noeg like Shmuel, where she would get more rights. So she married a guy, and she moved to Naharda with him, and then the husband actually died. They wanted to pay her off and to give her the ketuvah, and that would be the end of the mizonot. And she said, no, I understood when I was getting married that I was being promised support until such time as I want the ketuvah, which, of course, was the minhag in Naharda. So anyway, they come to Reb Nachman's Besdin, and Reb Nachman hears her accent and immediately identifies her as Bat Mechozahi. She's from Glasgow, isn't she? Anyway, so therefore, he was going to paskin according to her accent. And the halacha is, after all, he said, and Bavel, the whole Parvada, and that includes Mechoza, which is near to Bavel over there. The minig is like Rav, and so if they want to pay her off, they can pay her off. So they said to Reb Nachman, the people, the family that had come in with her, she said, but she settled down in Naharda, and she married a guy from Naharda, the whole Naharda Nesiva. So then Reb Nachman said to them, oh, so then the halacha is that Naharda and all the areas around Naharda go according to Shmuel. So then they can't pay her off, because when she marries, she takes on the dinim of the person that she's marrying or she's agreeing to move. And therefore was with the understanding that, in fact, the ketuvah would have been a virtual ketuvah that applied, because we don't write in all of these things in our ketuvah, would have been that they cannot pay her off until she wants to be tovat ketuvata. Now, there's another machlokas in which Itmar almana, Rav Amar Shamin Mashalel. The question is, oh, thank you. Yeah, that's exactly what I mentioned before that I'm going to be explaining. V'adhecha Naharda, what defines Naharda? Adhecha the sagi kaba de Naharda. Different areas had slightly different, we've seen this many times, that when we wanted to see what's the shear of a revias and so on, so we took a particular type of measurement that was used in a particular place, and we would give the measurements in terms of a specific instead of some type of universal measure. And that's because in those days, there was no Bureau of Standards, because the Frenchies hadn't arrived at the scene yet, and because of that, nobody had the gaiva to claim that their approach was the world's approach. It took a long time till we reached that level. But anyway, so what they used to do is they had, each town had its own Bureau of Standards. In other words, the police were empowered according to, you know, was it the Imperial gallon, the American gallon, or the Naharda gallon when you bought gas in Naharda. So every town had its own measurements. So if you live in a place where the standard measurement of purchasing a kav of something is defined by the Naharda kav, then that is the clearest indication that your municipality is Naharda, because that's exactly what you're keeping up with. And if that's the case, then the minhagim of Naharda would apply to you. That simple definition. Itmar. Almana. So Benogea, the din of Almana, does her clothing also enter into the equation? So in other words, look, the husband has bought her all kinds of stuff, And he understood that he's investing in these dresses and so on because he's going to be able to be living with her and enjoying these dresses. I mean, he doesn't want her to be parading around in the beautiful clothes that he bought her to attract other men, obviously, right? So now the question is, if he ups and dies, which he wasn't planning on doing, then the dresses that he gave to her were not meant for her. In which case, if she wants to keep her dresses, so we have to deduct them from the amount that she's collecting from the ketubah. If she's just stam living in the house, again, she lives in the house, gesinteret, enjoy the dresses I got you, and so on. But now you say you want to go off and make your own way in the world. I can just see it now. Going to the Academy Awards with your new award-winning movie in my dresses with your new husband. What an outrage. So therefore, if you're demanding your ketubah, then let's include how much all of those dresses cost me. And therefore, Rav says, yeah, whatever she's wearing, doesn't mean literally wearing, but it's whatever she's been wearing, and this is her wardrobe, she would have to accept that as part of the payment towards her ketuvah, where Shmuel says, no, that's completely out of the parsha. That was given to her, and it's hers. It wasn't given to her to wear as part of her being his wife. It's a gift. And therefore, being as she owns it, how can we deduct it from the ketuvah? Omer Rav Chiya bar Avi, it's interesting that the shita of Rav and Shmuel over here about whether clothing is meant to be a gift to her or whether it's a use that the husband gives, because in the same way you would think, look, somebody who's working in a sterile factory to make chips, right? So they provide him with this white baguette that covers everything in it, and everything that he does is provided for him. If somebody is coming into a barber shop and he's going to be the new barber in the lineup, so then they give him, you know, he's got a chair and he's got a clothes, and that's the way you're viewing the clothing of a woman. Like, you know, she's okay, fine. I mean, that's the machlokas Rav and Shmuel. But if somebody is a lakit, actually, fascinatingly, it means a picker. In modern terms, that's exactly the itinerant kind of relationship in which, you know, it's not clear what it is you're going to pay him and how long he's going to be with you and so on and so forth. He's just an itinerant picker. So the word liket means exactly that. And those days, the minig was, and it still is, you've got a bunch of like little rooms and so on that these guys move into seasonally when you have things to pick, and you give them their picking clothing, right? So it's the same kind of situation. Now, when it comes to that, we say that says Rav Chiya bar Avi, that the shitas of Rav and Shmuel become inverted, meaning that Rav holds that when you give him his picking clothes, they're a gift. You have no interest in recovering them and giving them to another guy. So that they're sort of, you know, like used to be, by the way, this was standard when you had a woman coming to work for you. She would have, I think in South Africa, there's still many people like this. She comes in and she has her own begadim, that you set aside for her, that she should be wearing a white thing and she should look clean and so on and so forth. And, that's the caretaker of the home or whatever it is. So that would be, according to Rav, that's not meant to be reused. And therefore, it's given to him. It's not taken off of whatever you agree to pay him in the end. And Shmuel holds just the opposite. Shmuel holds that it actually, if he's going to take it, so then it's deducted from whatever you own him. And that it's not the same as the case of the almana, because the husband gave it lechatchila, understanding that she's going to be with him. Masha Enkein, the guy who's taking the picker, gave it lechatchila on the understanding that he's not going to be remaining with him. So it's the opposite situation, where Shmuel would hold that we don't take off the begadim of the almana, but that's because he's mechuyev to take care of her. Masha'in kena, I have no chiyev to take care of the picker that's working for me. So if I'm giving it to him in that case, I don't mean to give it to him as a matana. And if he wants to take it and walk off with it, he has to pay for it. That's what we think now, according to Rav Chiya bar Avin. But Rav Kahana says, no, you should know that when it came to Lakit, Rav and Shmuel basically say the same thing. And that Rav would actually say, you have to take off that value from whatever you owe him for the work. And Shmuel says that you do not. So in other words, according to Rav Kahana, Rav says it's the same kind of thing. Same way you don't give clothing without an assumption that she is going to be using it for you and not for the Academy Awards. The same thing would be true of your lakit. I'm not handing it to you to keep. I mean for you to be using it and to keep working for me. Okay. In any event, Monach Basimana. So actually, there was a simon to remember who said what. According to Rashi, this is Rav gave this simon. And he said, you know, you could take an orphan and a widow and strip them and throw them out to the street, so to speak. In other words, that means that the value of their clothing is, in both cases, the almana, the armalata, obviously, is the simple case. The yatma, we're referring to as a lakit, in the sense that the poor guy who's got nobody to support, we call him like an orphan. You know, and we actually use that in English, that type of terminology. So who is ever orphaned by the company clothing and so on, closing. So that person is like left without anybody to take care of them. So they've been orphaned from their support. Omer of Nachman, you should know, I can show you that the Mishnah is almost 100% approved to Shmuel. And nonetheless, we don't paskin like Shmuel. So Afagav, the Tznan B'mas, Nisin Kavas Shmuel, so I'm going to show you, I've got a Mishnah in Erechin, which seems to back up Shmuel's contention that the clothing to a wife is a gift and certainly is not meant to be deducted from the ksuva. In practical terms, we paskin like Rav despite that. The Gemara, of course, will ask, well, I mean, if it's a Mishnah, it's a Mishnah. What happened over here? Here's the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Echad ha-magdish nechasav, echad ha-ma'arich et atzmo, ein lo b'ksut ishto, v'lo b'ksut banav, v'lo b'tseva, shetzava lishman, v'lo b'sandalim, even chadashim, shelakach lishman. So now the situation over there is, somebody goes ahead, he makes a donation to Hegdash. Now the Gizbor can come and collect that donation if he doesn't pay up, and it doesn't matter what the source of the donation is, wants to give his things to Hegdash, or he was magdish his own value. So he's going to pay whatever the Torah was koveya as that value. The Gizbor shows up at the door, and he finds all kinds of valuable things, like beautiful dresses. So he wants to take the dresses. He can't, because the dresses don't belong to the guy who made the neder. The dresses belong to the wife. What are you doing? These are my dresses. He wants to take the children's clothing. Children's clothing belong to the children. He wants to take the still in the original box wrapped sandals that were bought for the kids. He can't, because these already are considered to be belonging to the children. And, okay, what does that show you? That shows, not only that, even if all I did was I bought dye to be able to dye the clothing, I still haven't even dyed the clothing. The dye also belongs to the women or the children. So in other words, those things that are assigned to the people I'm supporting, whether wife or children, they're no longer considered to be mine. I mean, wow, that is Shmuel, like, squared. But Shmuel was saying that the clothing that you actually gave her and that she's actually wearing, not that you just bought for her, are still in a box. And over here, the Mishnah is saying anything that was meant for your wife, it's hers and can't be collected in as a debt. So, okay, I think it's a nice raya from that Mishnah, says Reb Nachman to Shmuel. Nonetheless, I have to tell you that when it comes to the actual psak, I paskin in my bezdin like Rav. And we actually do deduct the clothing from the ksuva. So, Omar, Rav, Reb Nachman, I understand. If you found a Mishnah, that Mishnah sounds really hot stuff. I mean, that's beautiful, raya to Shmuel. So why in the world are you paskining like Rav? So Amar Hilchot Hakavati de Rav, Omar Lay said Reb Nachman, because what is happening over here is your blink response. Blink responses are called lichora. Why lichora? Remember we use that word, oh, lichora, lichora. It's not as true as lichora. The word lichora is actually lichora. When you first open your eyes and blink at the light, it looks to you that the halacha is like Shmuel. So the flow, the riata, the natural flow of the Mishnah will always strike your intellect as being like Shmuel. So l'cheora kishmuel rehita. These are very, very important words that are abused. This, we need to remember what they really mean, because there was always this idea of a first take on something. That first take, which somebody takes a look to make money on as a book, and it's a wonderful book, Blink, right? But this is what l'chora means, at first glance, as Rabbanea pointed out. So at first glance, yes, it does look like that. But it's not like that at all, kimi ayantaba. When you look into it, you think about it, you will see that it is not like Shmuel. And as a matter of fact, why do I say this? Because it really is not nogea. Ki aknela, adaita lemekim kamei, adaita lemishkav lemefek no aknela. We're not saying that it doesn't belong to a woman in the event that she's in the house and so on. Of course it does. But what we're saying is that there is a fundamental assumption. There's a chazaka that it was given with a certain understanding, and that therefore it's a conditional ownership, which has nothing to do with the Mishnah and Arachin, does it? I mean, he's alive, she's alive, they want to take away the stuff he gave her, he gave it to her, and whatever assumed conditions were there are being met completely. She's here in my house, and I gave her this clothing. Mashenkin over here, when he gave her the clothing, he did not give it to her to go out to attend the Academy Awards with her new husband. That is understood as a chazaka. What does that have to do with this? And therefore, adaita lemishka v'lemef, she's going to take her clothing and walk out. Lo aknila, he did not give it to her on that basis, and therefore it's not hers. What does that have to do with the case in Erechin? Now, kalatad bebar al yashiv, avikatova k'tuva tamiyatme. So there was one of the daughter-in-laws of the bar be'yashiv we've had many times, who were quite rich. And basically, they were also quite smart. Okay. So the husband had bought her a lot of beautiful clothes. And she was basically a slob. She didn't dress nicely. So they tried to figure out a way in which they could get the Bezdin to immediately recognize that they have to award some of the ketuvah based on the beautiful clothing. But if they say that to the Bezdin, they know what she's going to do. She's going to say, what beautiful clothing? I don't have any beautiful clothing. You know, and then what, it's going to be a whole protracted machlokas. What did daddy give you? Forget it, right? So she was tovat the ketuva. So they say to her, so she's on her way to the courtroom, right? She's suing them. And they say to her, look, you know, we are a very high class family and you are dressed like a slob. So it's just too embarrassing for us to come into a courtroom and to have our father's latest consort look like a slob. Okay, so she runs home and she takes out every beautiful dress and every decoration and all the things that her husband had given her. She dresses up to kill to come to Besdin as if the Besdin is the Academy Awards, right? So she walks into Besdin looking like a million bucks because, I mean, after all, I mean, you really get to a woman by saying you're embarrassing us by how ridiculously you're dressed. Obviously, what's she going to do? She's going to dress up, which is exactly what she did. So she dressed to kill and walks into court. So she goes home and she takes out everything. Levishtino, Vitkasino, Lekule Mona, anything that she had. So then they come into the courtroom. So Ravina says, well, okay, yeah, we'll award you your ksuva, but we paskin like Rav, who says that we have to deduct all of these beautiful clothing. I mean, I see that you're really been paid your ksuva. There's actually a question if there's more value in the clothing than there were to the Matayim Zuz, does she have to, we paskin that she doesn't pay for the clothing. But then he said, Almana Shamin Ma Sha'aleha. Ahudi Omalahu. Now, there was a guy who was a Shchiv Meira, so he's on his deathbed, and he says, I want to give the standard Nadunya to my daughter, right? So in those days, it was like, it was fairly recently like this in most from kind of Shidduchim, It was pretty well defined what type of watch you had to give or what type of ring, whatever it is, right? So the guy said, give her the standard Nadunya, right? So the standard Nadunya, you walk into the special Haredi store in Lakewood and you say, I need a standard Nadunya. And they come out, they bring you a box of a standard Nadunya. And the value of the standard Nadunya was also very standardized. And, but what happened is that amazingly, somebody opened up a competitive store and he was selling the standard Nadunya for 20% off. Oh my gosh. So the price of standard Nadunya fell. So Zal Nadunya. So Amar Ravidi Baravin, the difference in the value is the property of the heirs. And because when he said to give a standard Nadunya, he was not talking about its monetary value. He was talking about this, the thing itself. So she can't go ahead and say, well, I mean, he said I should be given X amount of dollars. He didn't say that. So they only need to spend whatever it will cost them to get the newly lowered in price Nadunya. Ahud Yarmala was another case when a guy who was on his deathbed, again, these are Shemirat situations where the words themselves are sufficient to be makna. And he said, okay, 400 zuz, I've got this, oh man, I've got this incredible barrel of sherry, you know, it's kosher sherry, and it's worth 400 zuz, so take the money, 400 zuz from this wine to be the beautiful dowry for my daughter. Now, after he died, the value of his sherry went up, and now it was worth much more than the 400 zuz. So in this case, said Rabbi Yosef, the same thing is true over here. The profit from the raised price goes to his Yisomim. Because even though it's worth more, he never promised the wine. He said, use this wine to be able to sell to get the money that I want to give them. That's the point. Now, there was another mice that we've had. This is the second story where we had relatives of Rabbi Yochanan, where Rabbi Yochanan came riding to the rescue on his special lawyer's steed. As a matter of fact, Tosis is going to ask, I thought he already decided he's not going to be a lawyer, and here he's a lawyer again. So here's what happened. So the relatives here of Rabbi Yochanan, so they had a terrible situation, which his father had married this fat slob, and after their father died, she, with her appetite, was eating them out of house and home, literally. And they were chayef to provide her from his zonus. And this lady wouldn't just eat. I mean, she ate, and it was expensive stuff also. And she was being mafsid all of the money that they had. I mean, mafsid in his zonus because of the way that she was eating. So they came to Rabbi Yochanan and said, what the heck are we going to do? I mean, this is, you know, dad is dying, and she's going to sit here, and we're going to be left bereft. So he said, listen, I have an idea. Tell your father that before he dies, he should set aside a particular piece of property, and he should tell her, I'm setting aside this property for you so that you will always be able to collect your mizonos from this property. But that will put a ceiling to what she can take. Because if a woman agrees that a particular piece of property is what's going to be available for collection, so then she's only going to be able to collect to the maximal value of that property, which would be ingenious, because then you know, okay, at least you're covered, you know? Okay, so they went and they did that. And after the father died, Atalakami de Reish Lakish, to tell Reish Lakish, look, you know, she can't have whatever she wants. Amalu, so he said to them, if that's what your father did, it was pretty stupid, because now he's made the situation worse. Because by providing her this piece of property, remember that anyway, she had a lien against all of the property to be able to collect all of this stuff because it was part of the Tanayak Ketuvah. And by doing what he did was he guaranteed her whatever it is that she wants. He increased it. Ribala Mizonot doesn't actually set a ceiling. It gives her another mucker that if you guys make her trouble and you don't pay her for her lavish meals, she can go and sell the field and make sure that she gets enough for a lavish field. So what did you think you were accomplishing? Rule, well, Rabbi Yochanan didn't say that. Rabbi Yochanan said this is going to limit her. This is a disaster. Why don't you listen to Rabbi Yochanan? Amar Lahu, Reish Lakish said, listen here, buddy. you either go and give her the money that she wants, or I'm going to box Rabbi Yochanan out of your ears, okay? I'll box him out of your ears. I want to hear the words, Rabbi Yochanan. I don't agree. You know, if you'll be in his best, then you can go talk to him. But right now, you're going to do what I'm telling you. So they came to Rabbi Yochanan, and they said, this is terrible. Reish Lakish says that you messed us up. Do something. Amarlo, what am I supposed to do? Shekenegdi chalukalai. I got somebody who is just as big as I am in Torah, and if he's fighting me, I can't force him, can I? So actually, Rabbi Yochanan realized, apparently, that it was wrong what he had said. Amar Rabbi Abo, Rabbi Yochanan later told me that it does depend on how it would have been phrased, but that he messed up. If the father had said that this is limizonot, which was basically my wording originally, so then Reish Lakish is right. Riba la mizonot, because he can't mean it's the only source, because anyway, there was a lien on everything. So then that means he was being miyachin more money from his own cash. Okay. Anyway, but katsats la mizonot, if he said bimizonot, sorry, instead of limizonot, this is in place of your mizonot, right? So this is your mizonot. Ah, so then I would have been right that was a ketzitza of the mizonot, which is what I was trying to establish. It was an unfortunate oversight. Hadran alach na rash nitpatata. And so we start with the famous perek that we've been referring to all along, perek af al pi. So please, everybody, do get your noses ready. Put them on my mouth. Thank you. So af al pi. Now, if somebody is capable of explaining that idiom as part of our mesechet, that would be very useful. Why do we put noses on mouths? We don't have to. We could put a nose on a back and say af al gav. But in any event, it's all about the nose. How do you explain that? And they don't say in English the nose for nothing, right? Well, we'll leave you with that conundrum, and we'll start our parak. Afa pisha amru betula govamatayim v'almanamana imrat sala hosif. Even though we said there's a standard for betula and a standard for an almana, that's just the standard. But imrat sala hosif afilu me'amana Yosef, if you want to add, you can add $1 million if you want. That's up to you. Now, I mean, this seems pretty obvious. We're just going to discuss like what would be the understanding otherwise. But why? What does AFLP mean? Even though that, what do you mean? Even though, all you need to say is a person who wants to meet Harotzelo Sif Almana or Al Mataim Mosif. What's this AFLP? So Rav Meisha has a beautiful pshat. Actually, usually he doesn't sit there telling us the pshat in the Gemara. But in this case, when he discusses this whole issue, actually in the Igros Meisha, he explains the meaning of this Gemara. Why does it say af al pi? So Rav Meisha writes that since the Mishnah, this is really meant to be a continuation, as we've mentioned many times, the end of one perek is a lead into the next perek. And therefore, the point over here is that since the Mishnah immediately prior, which says, Lo katavla kituva, betula gova matayim ve'almana mana, mipnei shu tnai beidin, right? So that Mishnah introduced this concept of a kituva being just an expression of this virtual holy kituva, which sits there in the virtuality of a bezdin, and therefore, there's no way that you're going to get out of paying that ketuvah. That's what the Mishnah says. So therefore, I would have thought that you can't be mosif, like the Gemara is going to say, kidei shelo levayesh, whatever the reason is, right? And I would have said, a ketuvah is defined in a particular way to give a common denominator to the chashivas of every marriage. That's what the Gemara says. If the Mishnah before had not said, there's nothing you can do about changing the ketuvah, it is written in stone, virtual stone. So then I would have thought, okay, well, if that's the case, then it's very well defined and I can't do anything about it. Afalpi, therefore, says the next parak, which is the continuation of those time, even though they said this, and they defined Omru, Bitulago, Vamatayim, Amana, Amana, it was not meant as a cap. It was meant as a minimum. That's what it said. So therefore, you can add if you want whatever you want. Now, obviously, you could write any gift you want to anybody you want. I mean, but this is ridiculous. The point over here, as the Gemara will be medayik, is that the Tosefet gets all of the dinim of the Ketuvah. And we're going to talk about, unbelievably, this is like an amazing way to set up the dinim that we haven't thought about. 14 different issues that are addressed by these words. There are 14 different standard problems that are going to be defined by how we view the Tosefet. If we view the Tosefet as an extension of the Ketuvah, or we view the Tosefet as a gift b'alma. So this is an amazingly effective way to at one fell swoop, maybe it isn't fell, maybe just like a nice swoop, but in one swoop, it would be a chance for us to see all 14 inyanim that have to do with collection of ksuva and various implications of how it is that we went about. It's a really beautiful construct. And so it begins with this idea, because it's specifically in terms of this idea. In other words, a ketuvah has all types of special dinim attached to it. And therefore, even though that ketuvah was defined, it wasn't capped. That's the point. So you can add the Tosefet. If you want $1 million ketuvah, it's still a ketuvah. And in the event that nit armala or nit garsha, now, of course, here we run into the question of the ketuvah for an arusa, which is an important question that we've talked about before and we'll talk about later. So if she ends up becoming widowed, the guy dies or divorces her, bein min ha'erusin, bein min ha'nisuin, she collects every last bit of it, including the Tosefet. So it could be $1 million. And we're going to see whether this is dafka where you wrote it, and there's no chiyuv to write it because you only have to write the ksuva for nesua. And as we said before, the if you hold that an arusa yesh la ktuva, it would only be mano matayim unless you actually wrote the ktuva. We'll talk about all of this later on in the Masecha. Rebbe Lazar ben Azaria Omer, no, let's understand. If he already took it to the chuppah, so then mina nesuin, yes. She collects everything, even the additional Tosefet, the other $1 million that he had added. So if he dies after the chuppah, or divorces her after the chuppah, yes, the whole thing. But if he dies mina erusin, he never got it to the chuppah, or divorces her from the erusin, then she only gets the betulah, the ikra ketuvah, which is the betulah matayim, and the almana mana, because we understand that the Tosefet was only written Shilokatavla Ela Amanata Konsa. The whole point of the Tosefet was with the understanding that he is going to actually be taking her to the chuppah, an issue that we discussed earlier. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and then this is the same Rabbi Yehuda that we discussed in the previous Mishnah, which as Rav Meisha explains, is the introduction to this Afalpi Mishnah. So we spoke out over there that this has got to be going according to Rabbi Meir, not according to Rabbi Yehuda, remember. It was the whole idea, whether you can actually limit a ksuva if you want to. Rabbi Yehuda says, look, you can't limit the ksuva in terms of the takona of the ksuva, but you can effectively limit the ksuva. Because as long as you write the ksuva correctly, what you could do is you write a betula, a standard ksuva, for Matayim Zuz, and she can write a receipt on 100. So then, effectively, she's only going to be able to collect 100 because you have a receipt that you already paid the other 100. And it doesn't matter whether actually it was done or not. Same thing you do for an almana. Look, you obviously can't cancel a ksuva completely because you can't live with a woman without a ksuva. I agree. That can't be no ksuva. But Rebbe Meir Shita, which we'll go over again in a moment, if you give her a penny less than 200 or 100 for the betula and the amana respectively, arezu bi'ilat znut, that I disagree with. So let's lower the ketuvah. You can write the ketuvah correctly, for a mana, which is the virtual ktuva anyway, and she can write you out, hitkabalti mimcha 50 zuz, I already got 50 of it. Rabbi Meir says, absolutely not. I don't care whether it's effectively less or prima facie less on the actual shtar, makes no difference. If it's less than matayim for a betula, or less than a mana for an amana, then the very marriage is illicit. And any time you sleep with her, it's just a plain bi'ilat znut, and for all intents and purposes, you ain't even married. Okay, we will get into the details of this wonderful Mishnah and all of the 14 issues that follow immediately. Bezrat Hashem.